You're listening to The Hudson River, a weekly half-hour program about the nature, culture, and beauty of one of America's great waterways. The Hudson River is produced at Vassar College and brought to you in cooperation with this radio station. I'm your host, Mark Breslov. Coming up, internationally acclaimed singer-songwriter Dar Williams joins us in studio to tell us about her long connection to the Hudson River. We hear about a talking bench on the riverfront in Beacon, and we listen to an encounter with a raven at Breakneck Ridge. All this and more next on the Hudson River. On this week's Hudson River Culture segment, we speak with Constance de Jong about talking benches she's installed along the Thames in London and the Hudson and Beacon in Bear Mountain State Park, New York. The benches are part of Minetta Brooks' two-year display of art at 10 outdoor locations along the Hudson River. Just a simple question. Can you describe your talking bench project as it relates to the Hudson?
It consists of a set of benches, two of which are sound-equipped. And that means that when a visitor comes upon one of the sound-equipped benches and sits down, their presence on the bench triggers the audio material to play. And that audio material is written specifically to the site where the bench is.
The land belonged to Catherine Rambaud Brett. Madame Brett Park should be named Rambaud Brett Ecological Sanctuary.
Where are the benches located now?
In Madame Brett Park in Beacon, New York. And technically, it is the Fishkill, not the Hudson, because the Fishkill is what runs directly through the park, and it's along the edge of the Fishkill that the benches are being sited.
Who have you interviewed?
I've interviewed the director of a Latino organization in Beacon, which is called the Comité Mejente. And I've interviewed several elderly people who have lived their entire life in Beacon, may actually be second, third generation people to Beacon. And I have some young people who are still in high school or just graduating from high school. Mm-hmm. Somebody who fishes the river there. It is used still today for fishing. The older people's relation to the river speaks to a piece of history that's no longer there, which is that the Fishkill used to power several mills that are within sight of my benches. And two of the people I've interviewed had been workers at these mills. So their relation to the river in this specific area was not the leisure of the teenagers, but their day-to-day life as workers in the mill that's right there on the water.
Water becomes a hat.
The very first hat factory was right down in the creek.
The dust and the fabric was always flying because there was always doing something, spinning or something in there.
But prior to that, I could remember my father loading up his wagon with produce.
Corn and strawberries. My grandfather had a garden.
It was all wild. You were in touch with the earth every day.
Where we come from, we mainly live outdoors.
Oh, yeah, well, you lived on Earth.
It reminds me of the Thames portion of the project and the dock worker who was saying, I never looked at the river as being romantic.
Yes, exactly. And part of the reason is to peel back the different layers of usage and history that are very specific to the site, but, of course, have changed over time. So some of the uses are coexistent. Some have vanished altogether, and that in particular is for the people who went down to the river there to work. Those mills are no longer, functioning. So it's a piece of the history that I wanted to include.
It's reported that in these United States, there's only one city named Beacon. About 1800, some took up residence in a mill village near Fishkill Creek called Mattawan. I guess we can say the founder of Dutchess County is a woman named Catherine Rambaud Brett.
On this week's Hudson River feature, we have the honor to interview in our studios nationally renowned recording artist and singer-songwriter Dar Williams about her many connections to the Hudson. Dar grew up in Chappaqua, New York, near the Hudson, and begins by telling us about her earliest memory of the river.
My earliest memory of the river was my parents taking us up mountains called Anthony's Nose and Breakneck Ridge, which overlook the Hudson River. That and looking out the window of the car when we were driving to New York City to look for the little red lighthouse under the Great Gray Bridge, yeah. Which is a children's book, you know, the little red lighthouse. But I do remember my parents trying to sort of educate us about how cool this river was. As I got older, I realized what they were talking about. I think my parents got it about the connection between the environment, culture, natural beauty, cultural beauty, and then the thing that anchors it all, which is history. So they were always trying to kind of cross-reference those three to one another.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you, on one of your early tapes that are sort of unreleased tapes, that there's a song called Anthem that has a reference to Breakneck Ridge. Can you tell us about how that song came about? And
I wanted to document the fact that I felt very patriotic about this country as an active protester of some of its policies. So there was a sort of a ghosty verse of imagining my children in the future, climbing up Breakneck Ridge. I identified so strongly with the terrain. I think I also mentioned it because I thought the more we mention these specific name places, the more other people will remember the sense of place we have and possibly have more of a tendency to save them.
In love, like they do in the magazines, on a football field. It was a long daydream, all my high school spent in faithful disbelief. I know that he looks dumb, but he's smart underneath. They say I'm a bright kid, I have a future with the Puritan blessing of work to be done. But to see him cradling that beer is all that I am seeing. But then come college days, and now I'm driving home with my list of books to read and that self-important home. And my parents, I read them like the news. I know where they went wrong, and they're not friends I would choose. And there's a sunset over the mountains. I shout my scorn to the splendorous sky. For how does this light compare to all the world's suffering? But now it's a working day. I've laid my gloves to rest, and now I'm hanging over the sink with a pregnancy test. You can relax, babe, results are negative. Oh, but how I thought of kids and who they'd be about where we live. And I saw them climbing a breakneck ridge. Found the neighbor's woods for to make them their own. And I'll see them dancing across the lawns of my homeland. We found the town in 1641 for to farm and to pray and metro north to run. We took the fields, the marsh, and the moon and the sun. We got to work before the day was done. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. And I'll see them dancing across the lawns of my homeland. I am an American, from the fourth great turkey pageant to the protest march I stand. Oh, I am an American. I know there's blood in the pavement and we turn the fields to sand. Hey, I know where I come from, but I have a question. Shall we, the people, or never come home? For after all that we've been, are the dreams to come after?
Do you have other favorite memories of the river? I mean, you said you really grew to appreciate it after 20.
I was living in Northampton, Massachusetts, and Northampton, of course, was on the Connecticut River. So I think in noticing the Connecticut River and the daily role it had in my life, I came to understand how, you know, the changing moods of a river can really affect its community. And I think in a sort of a dreamlike, whimsical way, because that's something that being a songwriter allows you to pay attention to, I realized that I missed the Hudson River, that there was just something about the whole Hudson Valley that was calling me back. Really strongly. So I guess it was probably from recording in New York City, staying at my parents' house out in Chappaqua and driving into the city, that I would have that same experience of sort of this huge river. I just fell in love with it. I remember listening to Paul Simon, who I identify so strongly with, New York and the sort of New York metro area, as I drove in and thinking, this is where I belong. This is home for me.
We're speaking with singer-songwriter Dar Williams about her many connections to the Hudson River. To learn more about anything you hear on this program, visit us at www.hudsonriver.vassar.edu. Coming up on the Hudson River, an encounter with a raven at Breakneck Ridge, a soundscape of a flotilla of mallards guarding Garrison, and more. Next, Dar recounts a transformative moment when she appeared at Clearwater's Great Hudson River Revival Festival and speaks about the influence of Clearwater's founder, Pete Seeger, on her work. So you first played Revival like 96, 97, something like that? Your first time there, what was that like to finally go to the Great Hudson River Festival as a headliner?
I was really thrilled about it, I have to say. It got better and better, though, too. The first couple of years were in Valhalla, and they weren't really literally on the river. And I think that the time that my heart just really opened up to Clearwater was when they held it at Croton Point Park, and you see the river, you see the bridge up ahead of the park, and it's got this beautiful coastline, and it turns golden by the end of the festival. So my sense of engagement with the festival came when it was on the river itself.
Yeah, it needed to move back to the river, and I was at that show, and it was palpable to the audience that it was transformative for you. So that's interesting to have that confirmed in person.
Absolutely. That's funny to hear that. I think that day I was very chastened. I had been driving to the festival with my mom, actually, and she and I was saying, Pete Seeger is involved with trying to shut down the School of the Americas, which is really seen by people like me as a school for some really brutal, cruel stuff. And I said, I feel like I should mention that at Clearwater because Pete's involved with it. And we get to the festival, and she's like, I don't know if you really need to do that. I don't know. I mean, you know, you should talk about the Hudson River. I don't know. I don't know. I was still sort of prattling on, trying to sort of defend my position. And she said, excuse me. And she got out of the car, and my mom kind of crept into the brush and sort of parted some bushes so that she could just look at the river. And that's when I realized what she was responding to. She was saying, let's have a day that's about the river itself because it's just breathtaking.
So what is it that connects you so to Clearwater? You talked about the connection to the river, but
there's something about what Pete Seeger did. It's extremely populist. He basically is trying to get sort of the song and the beauty of the Hudson River into everyone's hearts so that they'll all want to belong to Clearwater. And the way he spreads his faith is through music and through trying to collect up the diversity of people who live up and down the river. And I really want to continue exactly that tradition.
I mean, you answered this question to some degree already about the influence that Pete has had on you, but could you speak about that a little bit more in terms of maybe musically?
Well, you know, every time I saw Pete Seeger growing up, I cried. I just, especially actually as a late teenager and in my early 20s, as I realized how precarious folk culture is in this world. My friend was working at a camp for disabled kids, and I just happened to visit her there, and Pete just showed up and started singing with the kids, and I could not stop crying the first time I saw him at Clearwater. And, you know, now we're kind of, you know, friends, and I'm much more interested right now in going to Pete and saying, how can I be your minion? And I find that my music is more influenced by folk rock of the 60s than by his music.
I think it's fair to say, at least in my personal experience, that there are occasions of music that you do that brings tears forth. And one of them for me, for whatever reason, is Southern California Wants to Be Western New York. Now, that mentions a quote, a Hudson River cleanup concert, that seemed to me to be a reference to Clearwater Revival,
oh, yeah.
But I couldn't figure out how it moved west.
Well, that's what everybody in the west of New York says. But the ethic of a river concert is very strong in a place like Western New York. So I thought it was fair to ask people from Syracuse to poetically imagine attending Clearwater. But they have their own river festivals and Finger Lake festivals. And, you know, there's a sense of place out there that's also very resonant. But I did, I think, want to sort of get in a mention of Clearwater.
And they'll have buttering on rainy weekends, autumn days that make you feel sad. They'll have 100-year-old plumbing and the family you never had. And a Hudson River cleanup concert and bundle bearing stork, and I hear they got a menu planned. It's Trey Western New York. Western New York.
You seem to be writing about it from firsthand experience of it. Were you out there? Did you live there? I mean,
No, I didn't live in Western New York or Southern California. I toured in both places. I was actually just outside of Binghamton, and then I went up to Ithaca. And in both places, I saw the same soggy stains around the ceiling and the same rusty stains around the sinks and the people who would live in these creaky haunted houses. It had history coming out of its ears. Then I went over to Southern California, where people were trying to eke out some sense of history, and that was very touching to me.
You talked about a project that you're contemplating or embarked on with Chris Bowser of Clearwater. You want to tell us about that?
I'm just very interested in, I think, carrying out the work that my parents started, which was trying to give an arts and crafts, literary, musical history of the river. I would love to introduce kids to how cool and creepy and beautiful their valley is, with so much historical depth to it, I think would make them very proud to live here and to get people excited about cleaning it up, because it does need so much cleaning up.
Now, you mentioned before this song that you're working on called The Hudson.
I think it's very sort of inspired by this idea that, especially in the suburbs, you kind of feel like you're on your own. You know, if anything, you're competing with your neighbors. And so the song, I think, would be about a person who kind of goes from something of a fortress mentality to understanding how important the river is. It's like the river is the constant that helps them understand how and who they are in the world.
From the Almanac, July 27, 1996. Breakneck Ridge, Hudson River Mile 56. The call of a raven could be heard among the cracky granite cliffs, but none was seen until the lone raven poked its scruffy head over the peak of the topmost ridge, peered down, and then disappeared. This observation was contributed by Tom Lake. I'm Butcha Vagez.
The Hudson River Almanac is an annual natural history journal compiled from the contributions of over 1,700 volunteers. Links on how to contribute materials or obtain copies are at www.hudsonriver.vassar.edu.
Time for the Hudson River Eco Calendar. I'm Jen Logan. Located near Red Hook in Dutchess County, Poets Walk Romantic Landscape Park offers breathtaking views of the Hudson River, Kingston-Rhinecliff Bridge, and the Catskill Mountains. On July 26th, you can also take in a poetry reading among the rolling hills and quiet woodlands. Sponsored by Scenic Hudson and Heliotrope, this poetry reading will take place at 5 p.m. You can call 845-473-4440 for more details, or email abicking@scenichudson.org. A river of experience is what you'll discover at the Hudson River Regional Festival, featuring over 200 years of art, history, and music. Explore the past and present by taking part in a Dutch trading post, watching artisans working in local communities, and traveling along the river to see the views that inspired Thomas Cole and Frederick Church of the Hudson River School of Painting. You can also take in jazz and classical concerts at one of the riverfront communities, visit galleries and art exhibits, or take a leisurely walking tour. For a complete schedule of events, call 1-800-724-1846 or visit www.columbiacountyny.org. The 4th annual Hudson Valley River Ramble, scheduled for the weekends of September 20th and 21st and September 27th and 28th, will feature 125 guided walking, hiking, kayaking, canoeing, and equestrian events, as well as explorations of the Hudson River estuary by boat and on foot. Sponsored by the Hudson River Valley National Heritage Area and the Hudson River Valley Greenway, the Ramble takes place throughout 10 counties from just north of New York City to the Capital District. For a complete Ramble program guide, call 800-453-6665 or visit www.hudsonvalleyramble.com. Beginning July 17th and continuing every Thursday this summer, you can enjoy live music along the shore of the Hudson River at Dutchman's Landing in Catskill, New York from 7 to 9 p.m. Music in the Park features performances of all types of music, including jazz, country, big band, and rock. For more information, you can call 518-943-0989 or email hoca@mhonline.net. Once again, that's 518-943-0989 or email hoca@mhonline.net. Talking benches, cooking grills shaped like animals, and sculptural binoculars and films aboard a floating cinema are among the outdoor artworks unfolding over the next 2 years along an 80-mile stretch of the Hudson between Bear Mountain and Albany, New York. Watershed, the Hudson Valley Art Project, is a pilot program of about a dozen commissioned public artworks sponsored by Minetta Brook, a nonprofit arts organization. For information, contact 845-831-4129. That's 845-831-4129.
Next week, our own Batsheva Vagez takes us on an audio voyage aboard the sloop Clearwater. Folk singer Danny Einbender tells us about the inspiration for one of his Hudson River songs. And we listen to a recording of the river at the foot of the magnificent Palisades. All this and more on the Hudson River. On this week's Hudson River Soundscape, we listen to some seemingly cantankerous ducks at Garrison, across from West Point. Just upstream from Garrison is the National Audubon Society's Constitution Marsh, one of the best places on the Hudson to view such waterfowl. The Hudson River Radio program is produced in association with Vassar College, its Environmental Studies program, and its Journalism Forum. Our student assistant producers are digital editor Sean Anderson and researcher and editor Batsheva Ghez. Vassar College professor Randy Cornelius is the project director. I'm your host, Mark Breslov, producer and project manager. This project has been funded in part by a grant from the New York State Environmental Protection Fund through the Hudson River Estuary Program. Special thanks to Fran Dunwell and Steve Stan of the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. Additional support for this program comes from Vassar College, with thanks to Susan Kuiper. Thanks also to Steve Rath. To listen to this program again or for more information, visit www.hudsonriver.vassar.edu. Email us at hudsonriver@vassar.edu.
Let me wander through this valley, let me trace the Hudson's shore. This is the river I adore. Let me sleep on sun-fed hillsides, as so many did before. How could a wanderer ask for more? But I'm not a dreamer, I won't close my eyes. I see the ugliness that's there. All that I ask is that we realize that only if we care can the damage be repaired. I see greatness in its waters, but I see other things there too. Were some of those others dumped by you? Will our lasting contribution be the garbage that we threw? Or will this muddy stream run blue? Must progress mean that we forget the past? I don't believe that has to be. Here's where the sloop of progress raised its mast. Is it lost at sea with a crew of you and me?